There's a performance tonight at EWU, a very dramatic performance because it's three dramatic works. One is a work called Woman of Salt by Anise Thigpen, which is based on the story of Lot's wife from the Old Testament. Another is a Jake Hagee song cycle called Farewell Auschwitz. And the third is selections from the opera Qualshun by Gary Edwards, a composer we know from our area. He lives in North Idaho. And he's with me, and we're going to illuminate some things about this opera Qualshun. But let's begin with some of the sounds of the opera played here by a harmonica player named Tom Stryker. From the opera Qualshun by Gary Edwards. That was Before the Anglos. And Gary Edwards is right here. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Vern.
And Qualshun is certainly a name we know as the Native American who was the victim of that event by which Hangman Creek got its name. I'll go only that far because you have much, much more story to tell as you created this opera about Qualshun. Tell me the whole motivation for this.
Well, about 1974, during the expo in Spokane, we stopped by the Museum of Native American Art. If you recall, there was a building downtown on Riverfront Park that's shaped like a teepee.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this painting. It was called The Hanging of Qualshun, and it showed Qualshun riding into Colonel George Wright's headquarters, waving a white flag of peace, accompanied by his wife, Wistox, and his brother, Locout. And he was there to rescue his father, who Colonel Wright had held hostage, and told him that he would set him free if Qualshun would turn himself in to the army. And within 15 minutes of arriving at the camp, he was stretched tight to a small tree and hung to death.
Mm-hmm. So that is that infamous part of our history. And did that cause you then to just keep thinking about him or to research him? Or what's the next steps in your own life relative to that, what you learned there?
Well, this image of the painting stuck in my mind for the next 40 years. And I knew eventually I would write a piece, but I had other evolutionary steps to go through first before writing an opera. And so finally, I started seriously researching it for 2.5 years and then completed it and wrote it. It took me 5 months to write it in 2016.
Well, as operas go, that's not all that long because it's a huge project. When you say write it, you're talking about the music, the notes, but did that include writing the Right, the book, as they call it in musicals, writing the opera, the script, the story.
Well, during the 2.5 years I was researching, I discovered several books about the Pacific Indian Northwest Wars. But the main book that I used was called Kamaiakan, the Last Hero of the Yakimas by A.J. Splann. And he wrote his book in 1917 and died in 1927. So basically, I was inspired by his works and basically used much of his wording to transcribe and compose the music.
Oh, nice. And has that book also been, has it stood up under the test of scholarship as being a fairly true telling as far as people know?
Well, I haven't read reviews about it, but yeah. The story is that he was a pioneer born in the early 1800s and was told these stories directly from the people who were present. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, there's no written history from the Indians' perspective. So this was the closest thing to being there that I could find in my research.
And over the next, you know, half hour or so, we're going to be talking about how the opera that you created out of this, but kind of give us the arc of the story that you used for the opera.
Well, the story from my perception, from the Indians' perception, is a tragic drama. And the opera is 2 hours long, and not wanting to make it 2 hours of doom and gloom, I included a love story, which is based partly on truth. The love story is that he had a wife named Wistox, so I inserted some fictional dialogue in the courtship of Wistox every few scenes so that there was some light moments in the opera, and included that love story.
Yeah, and so we have that. Over what time span does the opera cover?
It starts mainly in 1849 and goes through the War of 1855 that ended in 1858, which in September of 1858, Qualchan and a couple of dozen other natives were hung by Colonel Wright in the same day.
And so that's where the that's the time period. So mm-hmm. more or less a decade mm-hmm. of what went on there. And talk about the kind of the casting on this. Obviously, by doing a love story, that allowed you to put a woman's voice into it.
Well, I utilized Wistox not only as the principal female lead, but also as the narrator to keep mm-hmm. the narration going in between scenes, to keep the continuity of the story.
And so is that kind of how the opera plays out, that it's narration and songs, or is there dialogue, spoken dialogue also?
There's narrative in between the scenes, and there's dialogue. The casting is primarily male, which is difficult to cast, but there's 31 characters in the whole cast, which if you doubled the minor parts, you could narrow it down to 26 characters. Mm-hmm. But it included most of the major chiefs of the era.
And sir, then that I assume that Colonel Wright is in there too, the infamous Colonel Wright.
Well, if you picture yourself as being an Indian at that time, and life is going well, there's a balance in nature, there's a balance in population, there's a balance in food, and nature provides everything you need for food, clothing, and shelter. And then comes a group of strange people from another era, another place, and they tell you that they're going to take your land, your language. You can't use your language. You can't practice the same religion. They're going to basically change your whole way of life. You can imagine how you would react in that case. I think that's how most of us would react. So there was a building of tension over the years.
Sure. And Colonel Wright was sent in to subdue the Indians, essentially?
Basically, the Indians were becoming more increasingly restive because of the exploitation and appropriation of more of the Indians' resources. And so there was a series of battles, beginning with the Whitman Massacre. And it's interesting that when you refer to the Indians killing white people, they call it a massacre, but when the white people kill Indians, they call it a battle. Mm-hmm. So there's a bias there. But there was several conflicts before the end of the war in 1858.
Yeah. Talking with Gary Edwards, who wrote the opera Kolchen, of which five songs are being done tonight at EWU is this kind of the first time that some of the music will have been heard publicly from this?
Yes, this is the first time that there will be lyrics heard publicly.
And you spoke of the huge amount of work of researching an opera, writing an opera, and then that's probably only the tip of the iceberg on the huge amount of work of ever getting an opera produced, right?
Well, to me, the easy part is writing it. The hard part is getting it performed and produced, yes.
As you say, 31 characters and some of these things going on. So then you become a composer, or you're an instrumentalist. What's your instrument?
My main instrument in college was string bass.
Okay, and so you've encountered operas from the pit. You know operas from inside that way. You've written this opera. Yet it's an opera centered around the Native Americans. So how did you reconcile your musical language with what you thought was appropriate to this story?
Well, over the years, I've developed a mission, which was to bring out untold stories that I wasn't taught in school. And so I developed a passion for and an interest in Indian history and how we treated the population that was here before we were for thousands of years and generations. And as a boy growing up in Coeur d'Alene, I used to go to the city park on the 4th of July, and I would sit around the teepees that were set up at the city park and watch the natives all day long and doing their beadwork and dancing and singing and hearing their native language, and it was just fascinating to me, and they seemed to tolerate me all right. So I was very interested in this from an early age, and over the years when I've sung in popular bands, for some reason, I happened to partner with at least three or four Native Americans and enjoyed playing music with them and talking with them. And then when I was an activist in civil rights, one of my missions was to help build bridges between cultures. And so in order to clarify some of the mistakes of the past, I wanted to bring up some of the history so that people knew both sides of the story. There are two sides to every conflict.
Mm-hmm. And so in the actual writing of the music, how much did you use Native American mm-hmm. elements? How much did you use European elements in writing music?
Well, it's a combination of Native American elements and contemporary music and classical music, mm-hmm. because this has been my background. And so the Native American elements involve a lot of the use of the pentatonic scale, which is a five-tone scale. And I used natural minor keys without the raised third and the dominant chord, because I felt like that would be more stylistically appropriate. And so the idea is to keep it interesting, but to simplify it. And so the main way that I tried to keep it interesting was in melody and a variation of different melodies throughout the work.
And then what about rhythmically?
Rhythmically, I was inspired by the native drumming, and I would hope to include in a full performance of this piece eventually native flutes and native percussion. And I produced a CD for a Hopi friend of mine. He's Hopi Irish, named Jacob Johns, called The Unity Consciousness, and I was influenced by some of his native drumming.
We're going to hear a little bit more. What you did, you created, I think, probably a demonstration CD. This gentleman, Tom Stryker, the harmonica player, accompanied by what sounded like a string sounds. And you have nine tracks from Kolchen, and we heard one before the Anglos. We're about to hear the Battle of Steptoe. What do you want to say about how you, based on what you just said, how you wrote this?
Well, the Battle of Steptoe is pretty well-known in this area, the Steptoe Butte near Rosalia. And I tried to keep it historically true as much as possible, but condensing it into a 3 or 4 or 5 minute song. So that was difficult. But to know some of the history of the era, Colonel Steptoe thought that there was a lull in the conflicts, and so he was taking 158 troops out, basically just to go around the area and check things out. And as he approached the camps of the Indians, their perception was that he was leading a war party because there was no women in his party, and it was all soldiers on cavalry mounted with cannons and rifles. So there were six parleys before the actual battle started, eventually Colonel Steptoe decided that discretion was the better part of valor, and he took his men back towards Fort Walla Walla, but stopped on top of Steptoe Butte for the night to rest and have a fortified place where they could receive protection. And then in the middle of the night, they decided to continue the retreat, and they forgot to tell their rear guards, so there were some 12 men left behind. And during the retreat, they were fired upon, and several soldiers were wounded or killed, including Lieutenant Taylor, who left behind a widow and a small child at Fort Walla Walla. And so then the battle got very heated, and over the course of 2 or 3 days, Steptoe lost all of his powder, all of his wagons, all of his cannons. He buried some when he had time, and he left some people and cannons behind when he finally got back. He was reinforced eventually by a group of friendly Nez Perce warriors, and they told him they could win the battle if they would go back into the fray, and Colonel Steptoe said, no, I'm going back to Fort Walla Walla where it's safe.
And so let's hear the music you wrote for the Battle of Steptoe, written by my guest, Gary Edwards. Steptoe from Qualshan, from this album, Tom Stryker, the accordion player, the harmonica player on that. Back to the composer, Gary Edwards. Let's talk about the five songs that are being done tonight. This is, our discussion is centering around a performance at EWU at the Music Building Recital Hall. Three dramatic works, including the five songs from Qualshan that were being done there. So let's talk about these five songs that you wrote. The Song of First Love.
Yes. Let me start a little earlier than that. Mm-hmm. Qualshan's grandfather was named Kayaya, who was called Running Wolf, and he was quite the character. Some of his exploits include taking a horse from a horse race, and instead of completing the race, riding off into exile. And so he ended up with the fastest horse in his tribe near the Palouse, and ended up in the Yakima area near Yakima and Toppenish. So Kayaya was taken in by the chief of the Yakima Nation at that time, and accepted as a member of the tribe after he killed a big buck that was legendary for its size and intelligence. And but while he's living with the chief in his tent, he fell in love with the chief's daughter, Weowix. And the chief objected to him marrying Weowix because he wasn't of noble birth. He was just a common warrior. So he talked Weowix in after, this was after a couple of years after he'd moved in, he talked Weowix into running away with him. And so they stole off in the middle of the night on stolen horses and returned back to the Nez Perce area, and where they had two children. One was named Kamiakin and the other one was named Ojai. And Ojai's son was Qualchan. So you understand the relationship
okay,
there.
Yeah, okay.
So this is even before we're talking about Qualchan coming into the picture. So then one day, Running Wolf told Weowix that his former girlfriend, before he met her, was interested in him still, and he wanted to marry her as his second wife. And Weowix thought about that, and she didn't like the idea much. So in the middle of the night, she put her two sons on a horse and rode back to the Nez Perce Nation. We were talking about the first love.
Yeah.
So that's how that happened.
Okay. And then you're going to do the Walla Walla Council.
Yeah. The Walla Walla Council, I think it took place in May or June of 1855. And Governor Stevens had sent word to the natives that they were going to have to sell their land to the white people for a pittance and move on to reservations, or he would kill them all. I'm not a lawyer, but I think that when you make a threat at the point of a gun, that the contracts may be questionable at that point. But anyway, Kamiakin had formed a confederation of 12 at least tribes throughout Washington and parts of Oregon and northern Idaho, including the Coeur d'Alenes and the Spokane and the Colvilles. And so they had a conference and decided they didn't like this treaty, but what were they going to do? They were forced into it. They didn't have the weapons or the technology to fight the Americans. So at this council in 1855, eventually they did put their X's down to the paper signing the treaty after like 5 or 6 days of pressure and intense pressure from Governor Stevens. Governor Stevens was like 26 years old. He was very brash, very young, very arrogant, and thought he knew what was best for everybody. And so he pressured them to sign this treaty as fast as they could. So then about a month after this Walla Walla Treaty was signed, Kamiakin called a council of the chiefs and the tribesmen. In fact, the Indian councils included women, and they thought it was strange that the Americans never brought their wives or women to the conferences, because you should hear all sides of the story. So at the Native conference a month after the Walla Walla conference, the consensus was that the treaty was no good and that they should send out a warning to all the white people that if they crossed their boundaries, they would be killed. And Qualchan was given the task of taking charge of sending out the couriers and the lookouts and setting up fires, signal fires on the mountains to be lit in case their land was being encroached upon. So sure enough, a group of six miners were headed towards Colville to work in prospecting. And Qualchan and his band attacked him and killed him. And an agent named A.J. Bolin was sent out to investigate. And he was friendly with the Indians, and they liked him. But some of the younger people decided to kill him and his horse, and they burned their bodies. And Qualchan was blamed for this crime, but he was actually innocent of that crime.
Yeah. So I can see, therefore, by using the Walla Walla Council, that worked well in the opera to set up a lot of the tension
that
was going to yield to the inevitable result, which we know. And then the Song of the Hero probably is fairly obvious. Is that where Qualchan really understands his own power?
That's right. At the end of the fight with the miners, Qualchan returned to court Wistok some more, and there was a romantic scene. But she tells him that he's now a hero, that all of the people respect him highly because of the action he took against the miners, and So he's becoming gaining quite a reputation for being one of the bravest warriors in the Yakima Nation.
Yeah, and then you have a love song, The Lucky Slide.
Yeah, The Lucky Slide is based partially on truth. There was a waterfall in the central Washington area where the Indians had a legend that if you slid down the waterfall and made it to the bottom, you were supposed to make a wish while you were sliding down, and if you reached the bottom, okay, then that meant that your wish would be granted. Well, Qualchan's wish was to marry Wistock, so there's a proposal at the end of the scene, and she says yes, and so he says, my wish came true.
And then finally, tonight on the presentation at EWU, you are doing the conclusion of the opera, right?
Right, yeah. The last days of Qualchan.
Yeah, which we'll maybe just let that go, and people that come, you know, can experience that. So that is these five songs that will represent an overview and a sense of the opera Qualchan that has been a really almost lifetime passion for you, Gary Edwards, hasn't it?
That's right. Whenever anybody asks me how long it takes to write a song, I say, well, it took me 77 years to write this song, because it's a culmination of all your experience and influences over your whole lifetime.
Absolutely. Well, that's terrific. So again, that presentation is tonight at 7:30 at the Music Building Recital Hall of these five songs from Gary Edwards' opera. Also, a short theatrical piece, The Woman of Salt, by Anise Thigpen, based on the biblical story of Lot's wife, and then the Jake Hagee set of songs called Farewell Auschwitz. We'll go out with a little bit more of Gary Edwards' music. This is the music you wrote for the Wright campaign of Colonel Wright, and I assume this starts building toward the tension of the opera.
Exactly. There's tense emotional scenes in this section.
Okay, let's hear that. Thank you for coming in, and thank you for illuminating this for us.
Well, it's a great pleasure. Thank you.
And so here it is, a little bit more of this music from the opera Qualchan. Thank you. So a sample of the music that will be in that opera tonight, those five songs from the opera. Not that scene, but those five songs from the opera. This is at Eastern Washington University, 7:30 in the Music Building Recital Hall for these songs from Qualshan and Woman of Salt and Jake Higgy's Farewell, Auschwitz.